studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California. I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Philip Lambert is my guest this week. He has written about musicians Charles Ives and Brian Wilson, and his latest book is To Broadway to Life, The Musical Theater of Bach and Harnack, a detailed look at the careers of the creators of Fiddler on the Roof and other classics of the American musical theater. Philip Lambert, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thanks for inviting me. Glad to be here.
Now, Bach and Harnack, they came to prominence right at the end, I guess, of the golden age of the American musical.
Yes, so the golden age usually goes somewhere around the late 50s, early 60s, with shows like West Side Story and The Sound of Music in the late 50s. Most people think, you know, that's sort of the end of that period when all the great Rodgers and Hammerstein musicals were coming out. And Bach and Harnack were just getting started right at that time. And their big one, Fiddler on the Roof, came right in the middle of the 60s.
64, was that the first year?
64 is when Fiddler on the Roof premiered, yes.
How did they become a team and get into Broadway?
Well, they both moved to New York wanting to get to Broadway and tried in different ways separately. They were in New York about 5 years before they met and about 10 years before they really started writing shows together. But they separately were involved in revues on Broadway, and they spent summers in the mountains near New York City. And finally someone, actually it was Jack Cassidy, knew them both and introduced them. And shortly after that, they started working on their first show together, which was The Body Beautiful.
I'm not familiar with that show.
Yeah, most people aren't. It was in 1958, and not a big success. They wrote some really great songs for it, but I think most people thought the story and the characters weren't that compelling.
How long a run did it have?
It was 6 weeks, it hasn't been done, I don't think, much at all since then, certainly not on Broadway or even off-Broadway. But just a few years ago, a little theater company in New York, the York Theater Company, was having a retrospective of the work of Joseph Stein, who wrote the book for The Body Beautiful. Mm-hmm. And they did that in a very small theater. It was interesting. It is kind of a strange story, but the songs that Bach and Harnack wrote are really outstanding, and it was a rare opportunity to hear them.
Was Jack Cassidy in the show?
Jack Cassidy was not in that show. He was in a show that Sheldon Harnack was marginally involved in, and it was not a success, but I think it was the opening night party at this show, which was called Shangri-La, in June of 1956, I think. And they just were having this party, and that's when Jack Cassidy introduced them. Jack Cassidy was a big part of a later Bach and Harnack musical, She Loves Me.
Oh, yes, of course.
That was some years later.
So they had not a success with their first outing, but they persisted, and their next outing was magnificent.
Yes. The next one was Fiorello. They actually weren't hired together as a team to work on that. Jerry Bach was hired as a composer, and Bach and Harnack still weren't a team. They didn't have a track record. Their first show together wasn't a success. So Bach was hired, and then they looked for a lyricist to work with him and thought about several people. And eventually, Bach and Harnack got together and said, we're going to write some songs that will prove that we can write the kind of music they want for this show. And they finally got the job as a team. The show was Fiorello, based on the life of the New York congressman and mayor.
At one time I heard that that was to be a vehicle for Lou Costello. It's true.
I've never heard that.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, Lou Costello would have been perfect, but he passed away before they had an opportunity to do that with him.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, but so there you go. I told you something you didn't know. Tom Bosley, of course, was the star of the show.
Tom Bosley, and apparently bore a remarkable resemblance to the actual Fiorello.
And to Lou Costello.
And to Lou Costello, right.
Yeah, well, Tom Bosley passed away recently, but I saw him on Broadway not that long ago in Cabaret with Marriott Hartley. But anyway, back to Bach and Harnack. So they didn't come up with Fiorello. It wasn't their idea.
No. The book writer, Jerome Weidman, had the idea, and he had been working on it, and then they brought in eventually George Abbott, the great director and writer. And he and Jerome Weidman and George Abbott together wrote the book. And Bach and Harnack wrote the music. And eventually Bobby Griffith and Harold Prince were the producers. They had a big success not long before that in West Side Story.
So now that Bach and Harnack had the success and the play won the Pulitzer Prize and so forth, did that make them the best of friends? Were they good friends?
They were. They always said they were good friends. They got off... They got along very well from the very beginning and worked very well together. Before they got together, they had had other partners, and I think in every case, their partners were competent but didn't really equal the talent of Bach and Harnack. And then finally, when they got together, they were matched with someone of comparable skill, and it just was magic.
So what was their working relationship like? We're talking to Philip Lambert, and his new book is called To Broadway to Life, The Musical Theater of Bach and Harnack. How did they work together?
I think pretty much from the very beginning they worked the same way. They would start with an idea for a show, and they would then go their separate ways. And Harnack would do research and think about themes and possibilities for songs, and Bach would write melodies that had no title, no lyrics at all, but just were general impressions, general feels that he would get based on the story. And he would make a recording of these melodies and give them to Harnack, and then Harnack would start adding lyrics to them. And that would usually generate about half of the songs for the show. And then as they went along, Harnack would start getting other ideas for lyrics that didn't fit any of the melodies, so he would write lyrics by themselves and give them back to Bach, and then Bach would add a melody to go with this original lyric. And they've both said that for every one of their shows, about half the songs started with one of Bach's melodies and about half started with one of Harnack's lyrics.
Now, they weren't in a room together with one of them yelling stuff out at the end?
maybe toward the end of the process they might be, but certainly not at the beginning. At the beginning they were very separate, and typically in those days, not so much anymore, you know, you would take the show on the road before you went to Broadway, and they would have at least two stops on their pre-Broadway tour, usually Boston and Philadelphia, or maybe Washington, maybe Detroit. And a lot of changes occurred on those outings outside of the city. So I think by that time, when they were in a hotel room in Detroit or Boston, then they would pretty much be working together most of the time, and they would be doing last-minute revisions. And in fact, some of the best-known and greatest songs from their shows were written at the very last minute in a hotel room somewhere.
Fiorello is a show that, you know, kind of dealt with current events. People in New York then, in 1958,
yeah,
well remembered Fiorello,
yeah,
reading them the funnies on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess today maybe that show is kind of dated, or people don't perform that show anymore.
That may be one reason it's never had a Broadway revival. The City Center Encore series presented it. In fact, it was the first one when they started that series. It was the first show they did. And there have been a number of small productions in small theaters in the city and outside of the city, and it gets produced elsewhere. But I think whenever it is produced nowadays, people have to provide a lot of historical context that wasn't necessary originally. And yeah, I think you're right. I think it probably is somewhat dated nowadays, and that may be why it never gets revived on Broadway.
And what about the next show, Tenderloin? Was that the next one?
Tenderloin was next, that's right. Actually, not long after Fiorello, less than a year after Fiorello, Tenderloin opened and was not a big success. It was basically the same creative team that did Fiorello. They had such great fun and such great success with Fiorello, they thought they'd do it again. And they actually started working on it when Fiorello was just opening or just before. But it just didn't work out. They had a book by Samuel Hopkins Adams called Tenderloin. And they had exclusive rights to this book, which is just coming out. And they had the same book writers working on the book. But they also had a prominent actor that who they got on board early, Maurice Evans, who was acclaimed as a Shakespearean actor and a classic actor from London. Most people didn't know he could sing, and he actually, I think, was a pretty good singer. But because they had him on board very early on, they had to focus their story on him. And in the original novel, the focus is more on this pair of young lovers. And the reason it's called Tenderloin is it's about the Tenderloin district in New York, which was the, sort of the center of all the vice and corruption. So by focusing the story on this main character played by Maurice Evans, who was a preacher who was trying to get rid of all the vice, they sort of focused on the character that who was having the least fun on stage. And the audience, I think, felt drawn to all the singing and dancing that was going on in the speakeasies that they were watching, and failed to sympathize with the one they were really supposed to sympathize with, and that was the preacher. There was a famous quote by Walter Kerr in his review. He said, "Maurice Evans has an extremely unsympathetic part. He plays a crusading minister who wants to eliminate the production numbers." And I think that's what the audience thought.
Did they learn from that experience then? I mean, why didn't they realize that out of town? Or I guess they were stuck with Evans.
That's right. At that point, they couldn't change the story so drastically to refocus it, and they were just pretty much stuck with that. They did realize it out of town. Harnick has said that right after the first show they did in, I think it was New Haven, Connecticut, he got everyone, George Abbott got everyone together and said, "Okay, this isn't working. What's the problem? How can we fix it?" And then they realized that they could do some things and they could make it better, but some of the flaws were really structural and there wasn't much they could do. And that's probably one reason that show hasn't been revived much or done much since then.
Were there great songs in that show?
There are some great songs. The soundtrack album makes the show sound like just a spectacular success. and Harnick too, but Bach as a composer is just a master of evoking a certain time and place and style and writing songs that sound like they're authentically from a certain period. And that's what he did, well, really in all his shows, but it really, really sparkles in Tenderloin and Fiorello. He really captures the spirit of the music of the, you know, turn of the century.
Sunrise, sunset, swiftly.
Let's talk about their masterpiece, Fiddler on the Roof. I mean, I think not only was it their greatest show, but I think it might be one of the greatest shows in the history of Broadway.
Yeah, I think most people think that's the case. It's usually right up there on the list of, you know, 10 best musicals ever, and within the discussion somewhere, along with great ones like West Side Story and The Guys and Dolls and My Fair Lady.
So how did it come about? Was that their idea to take Sholem Aleichem, or did someone else come up with it, or what?
Yeah, that was their idea. They first started with actually it's a novel that Sholem Aleichem wrote called Wandering Star, and they and Joseph Stein, who they knew from years earlier, planned to make a show based on that novel. They read the novel and then realized it was just too big. It had too many characters. It had too many locations, and the story was just too large. But then they started focusing on short stories of Sholem Aleichem, and that's when they finally realized they had something.
Hadn't there been a play also, The World of Sholem Aleichem? Doesn't that predate Fiddler on the Roof?
Yeah, actually, Sholem Aleichem himself wrote a stage adaptation of some of those stories, and that was done quite a bit in the Yiddish Theater in New York in 1919 and the 20s, actually after Aleichem died. And then there was a film in 1939 also by one of the actors who had been in Aleichem's adaptation. But in the late 50s, Arnold Perl had written a couple of versions for the stage. One was called Tevye and His Daughters and involved a couple of the same stories that Joseph Stein used for Fiddler on the Roof.
Dear God, you made many, many poor people. I realize, of course, that it's no shame to be poor, but it's no great honor either. So what would have been so terrible if I had a small fortune? If I were a rich man, all day long I'd biddy biddy bum. If I were a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work hard. If I were a biddy biddy rich, man, I'd build a big tall house with rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with a real wooden floors below.
How did Zero Mostel get involved?
Well, they had centered the story on the character of Tevye the Milkman, so that made the actor who played Tevye a very important part of the casting, obviously. And they actually ended up considering a whole roster of people. And at that point in their careers, they were an established team and really attracted a lot of attention for this casting decision. And even people, this is what I've read, I find it hard to believe, but people like Frank Sinatra had just put out feelers to see if there was any interest.
Sinatra's not Jewish. Did they know?
I'm sure that he felt like that wouldn't stop him. By that time, Zero Mostel had already made a name for himself, even though he had been blacklisted earlier.
Right.
He was back and prominent. He had been in Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum in the early 60s. And what was the other one?
Rhinoceros,
exactly. So he was a big name, and he wanted to do it because his father was a rabbi, and he related to the story and wanted to help tell the story of this time in the late 19th century in Russia. And so he was involved, and not only just embraced the role, but actually gave Bach and Harnack ideas on song bits and lyrics and things like that.
And he played the role on Broadway for the first couple of years.
It was only about 9 months, actually. The show itself, the first run, was almost 8 years, from 64 to 72.
Right. For a while, it had the record of the longest-running show on Broadway, right?
It did. It set the record for the longest-running musical in 71, and then set the record for the longest-running show of any kind in I think it was June of 72. And then when it finally closed in July, that was the record, and that stood until 1979 when Grease overtook it for that record. Mm-hmm. Of course, nowadays, every time Phantom of the Opera puts on a show, it's a new record.
Right. Was Herschel Bernardi the next Tevye?
Herschel Bernardi was number three.
Uh-huh.
Luther Adler was the second one. Herschel Bernardi was in there. There were a total of seven in that first run, seven different Tevyes. And Herschel Bernardi apparently was a real favorite, not only of audiences, but of Bach and Harnack and Joseph Stein. And he was Tevye in a production at the New York State Theater in 1981. That I think they largely presented that show just so they could feature him, and that was apparently a big success. He had a Tony nomination for that.
Well, I saw it with both Zero and Herschel Bernardi, mm-hmm. and I think Herschel Bernardi was more serious than Zero. Zero made it much funnier and mugged a lot and ran.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are stories about the things he did, departing from the script and being, you know, just generally difficult on the stage. I think when the show first opened, he behaved himself, but as it went along, he started to get bored. And you know, one thing the creators had tried very much to do was to avoid Yiddish expressions. They have, you know, to life l'chaim, and another, they have Mazel Tov in another song, but otherwise they were trying to give it a universal feeling and not present words that people in the audience may not know. But one thing that Zero Mostel apparently started to do was just to throw in these Yiddish expressions, and that was just one example of the problems he was creating. So when his first contract was up after 8 or 9 months, I think they were just happy to say goodbye to him, and it ran for another 7 years.
Of course, he toured with it later in his
mm-hmm.
life.
Yeah, he toured in 75 and 76, mm-hmm. and then at the end of that tour, it went back to Broadway, and that was the first revival on Broadway of the show.
How many times has it been on Broadway?
Total of four.
Huh, that's interesting. The movie, I think, is kind of a failed effort.
Most people think that. It's serious. It's dark. It's not as funny as the show usually is on stage.
And although I like Topol, I don't think he was very good in that role.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people have said, including Sheldon Harnack and others.
They didn't have any say in it?
not really. Norman Jewison, the director, was pretty much in charge, and they had considered a lot of different Tevyes, including Zero Mostel, including some actors who had done the role in Europe, but Topol had done the role in London. And they felt like he had a warmth and a screen presence that they really wanted. And actually, Topol did the Broadway revival in the early 90s.
Yes.
And then he did it on tour in the United States just a couple years ago. And I think people who saw him there saw a really different Tevye than you see in the film.
He's a bit older.
He's certainly more age-appropriate. But also, he just seemed to be having a lot more fun with it.
I once saw a production with Leo Fuchs, who was a great star of the Yiddish Theater.
Mm.
It was very good. And, of course, my high school. That was a really great production. I played the rabbi, Richard Diskin.
Okay.
Anyway, so here are these two guys, Bach and Harnack, and they had one of the most successful shows on history of Broadway, and then they had more successes, and then they both lived. I mean, I know that Jerry Bach passed away, but Harnack is still living.
Yes.
And I think Jerry Bach died last year, right?
Last November, yes.
So why did these guys stop working together?
Well, that's a good question. I think there are several reasons, and there are probably other reasons that only Bach knew and only Harnack knows. One of the big points of contention, I think, between them was some rift that had developed during their last show, which was the Rothschilds. It had to do with the leadership of the show and the director and the producers, and Bach ended up siding with one person, and Harnack ended up siding with the other, and they both held their ground, and I think it created some tension, and that carried over. They had also discussed writing with other people, and I think Harnack was more open to that idea than Bach was. And Harnack sort of wanted to write an opera, and Bach didn't. And this was a couple years before the Rothschilds. And I think that just got Bach to thinking that their relationship may have run its course. Bach also was a gifted lyricist. He had always written songs and written his own lyrics, going back to the very beginning. So he was perfectly happy to go off on his own, and didn't feel like he really needed a lyricist. Plus, there's, of course, the issue of personal comfort. By the time Fiddler had been through its run of almost 8 years, you know, they were in a financial situation where they could really be very choosy about what they did. And I think by that time, Bach especially felt that he only wanted to do the kind of work that interested him the most, and if that meant not working with Harnack anymore, then he could afford to do that.
When they ended their professional relationship, did they end their friendship as well?
There was some personal tension in the 70s, and then in the 80s they started communicating more, especially to talk about revisions of shows or new productions of shows. And there were Broadway revivals of The Apple Tree and She Loves Me in the 90s and in the 2000s. And so by that time, they got along very well and were close friends, but they never wrote songs together. They did write one song together for the most recent revival of Fiddler on the Roof in 2004. They wrote a song called Topsy Turvy, which was added in the second act for Yentas to sing.
Huh.
And they both said that it was a great experience, and getting together to write a song again was just like the old days, but that was it. They just did the one song.
Is it a good song?
It's okay. I don't think it really adds anything to the second act.
Do we need another song in Fiddler on the Roof? I mean, it's so perfect as is.
Yeah, well, it replaced a song. It didn't actually add it. There was a song called The Rumor in the second act, and it replaced that. But I think, you don't really need it.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, you know that I'm still very young. Please take your time.
Up to this minute, I misunderstood that I could get stuck for good. Dear Yentas, see that he's gentle. Remember, you was also a bride. It's not that I'm sentimental. It's just that I'm terrified. Matchmaker, matchmaker, plan me no plans. I'm in no rush. Maybe I've learned playing with matches a girl can get burned. So ring me no ring. Groom me no groom, find me no find, catch me no catch, unless he's a matchless match.
Well, Philip Lambert is my guest. The book is called To Broadway, To Life, and we've been talking about the careers of Bach and Harnack, but the book really goes into depth discussing the music, it's really analytical and extremely well written. And
thank you.
Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Glad to be with you. Thanks for inviting me.
That's all the time we have for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf, and I hope you enjoyed the show and you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. I want to thank Philip Lambert, the author of To Broadway, To Life, the musical theater of Bach and Harnack, for being my guest this week. I also want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work. Thanks, Breanne. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.